bought a chair. It was blue. The area rug over the hardwood floors was multicolored. Hell, even the exterior of my house was painted in sea green with sky blue trim and a maroon door. Colors everywhere, like the rest of this city. Except for one place. I shuffled into the bedroom and flicked the small lamp on my nightstand. My bedspread was white. The universe orb, Jonah made me, set at its exact center. A dark ball of shimmering black and blue and glowing stars. A black hole in the center of a white universe, sucking me in. The orb drank in the pale yellow lamplight. The planet in the center shimmered red and green. "It was a good night tonight," I said, kicking off my shoes. I lost my balance, but caught it again after only spilling a tiny bit of vodka on my wrist. $400 with tips. The place was packed. You should have seen it. In the bathroom, I set my cocktail on the sink and used the toilet, then washed my hands. The reflection in the glass was a ghastly mess of smeared mascara, tangled hair, and pale skin. Jonah would hardly recognize you. The small, weak thought spoke up from the place that hated what I'd become. A stubborn, self-preservationist instinct that tried to snap me out of my inebriation. It never worked. Jonah would recognize me anywhere, I snapped, and snatched my drink off the counter. I drained it as I went back into the bedroom. Ice cubes clinked as I set the highball glass on the nightstand. The alcohol slipped coldly into my gut, slushing around with everything else I'd consumed today and tonight, and all the days and nights of the last few months. The room spun faster now. I'd hit the sweet spot where alcohol would drop me quickly into sleep and where any dreams I had would be too slippery for me to grasp when I woke. I made sure the flask in my drawer had enough to start my morning or early afternoon, depending on how late I slept. It was easy to get bombed at a party or after a show. I would know. I used to do it after every concert with rapid confession. But there's a science to staying drunk all the time and still being able to function. Sort of. I sort of functioned. I held jobs that didn't require sobriety. I kept to my routine, part of which was downing a nightcap, checking the morning flask, and curling up next to the orb to tell Jonah about my day. I lay down on the bed, my body feeling like it weighed 1,000 pounds. I rested my aching head on the white duvet and curled my body around the orb. Knees up, arms curved, I pulled the universe snug against my chest, cradling it to my heart. Rufus, the owner, he says they want me at Le Chacal more than once a week. Word's gotten out. But I have a routine, right? 4 different clubs. 4 nights. No getting too attached to any one venue. I closed my eyes for a moment as the shame swamped me. But I can't do more. I can't keep going like this. It's killing me. I have to quit, don't I? But I don't know how. Help me, Jonah. Big Easy. I told you about him, right? I sniffed, wiped my nose on my sleeve. He's the bartender at Le Chacal, remember? I call him Sherlock sometimes, because he's always trying to find out about me. Asking about friends or family. He worries about me. He wants to know where I came from or who to call. He wants to call someone. I know he does. He thinks I need help. I closed my eyes to hear the words aloud and tried to press them down with everything else. There's no one to call. It would only worry them or mess up their lives. What a crock. Henry and Teddy and Beverly were probably already worried. I focused my bleary gaze to the orb. As always, I felt myself being sucked in. Lost in the dark expanses of stardust and the glowing swirls of illumination ringing the lonely planet. I searched for Jonah there, held the orb tighter in my arms as the tears fell unheeded. Unending. I'm so sorry, I whispered, my voice a watery croak. I left your mom and Teddy. I didn't want to. People shouldn't leave, I know that. I should know better than anyone. But I couldn't stay. And I'm so sorry for leaving and for failing you. I am the drowned girl. I'm drowning, Jonah. I need you back. Please come back. My stomach clenched at the effort it took to hold back the grief, terrified of what would happen if I succumbed to it. I wrapped myself tight around the orb, completing the last step of my routine. Every night, I held the orb and begged Jonah to come back, tears leaking from my eyes as if from a dam that was ready to burst. I cried and begged until the booze dragged me down into the black depths far beneath the surface. Every night, I called one final thought into the deep darkness. Come back to me. And just before the dark consumed me, a whisper returned. My angel, let me go.
Chapter 3. Theo. Friday afternoon, and Vegas Inc. was as packed as the tiny place could get. Zelda, Edgar, and I worked nonstop, the buzzing of our needles competing with pulsing electronica music. Friday was Zelda's turn to pick music. Vivian manned the front desk, answering calls and setting up appointments for walk-ins that might or might not come back. Las Vegas was saturated with tattoo shops. Most of the turned away would probably go somewhere else.
"You got any plans this weekend, T?" Edgar asked when we were both between clients.
"Got a hot date?" Zelda asked from her station. The words were sharp, but a hunch in her shoulders made the lie on my tongue hesitate. Behind her luminous green eyes, I could see a flicker of pain, strangely familiar to my own.
"Nothing major," I heard myself say. "A lot of studying to do." "Come out racing on Sunday," Edgar said.
He finished his Red Bull, crushed the can, and lobbed it at the trash basket.
"Me and some buddies are going to rent ATVs."
"Yeah, maybe."
"Maybe," Edgar snorted. "Come on, man."
"I got 3 midterms next week," I said, crossing the black and white checkered floor toward the restroom behind the reception desk. I gave Zelda a nod as I went by.
"Sorry, Z. I'm running on empty."
I had to wipe my hands on my jeans after washing them.
"Viv, we're out of paper towels,"
I said as I emerged from the bathroom. She was on the phone and only raised her chin at me. I started to walk away. Right at the moment, the music on the sound system faded to a low pulse. Above the quiet beat, I heard Viv say,
"Teddy. No, no one named Teddy here."
The name slugged me in the back.
I whipped around, my heart pounding out of my chest, yelling, "No!" as Viv lowered the phone to its set. "Viv, don't!"
I raced forward and yanked the receiver out of her bewildered hands. I put it to my ear and said in a rush, "Hello? Don't hang up." My ears burned, poised to hear Casey's voice, rich and clear, with a little gravel at the edges.
"Is this Teddy?"
It was a man's voice. Disappointment caved my chest in.
"Yeah, that's me,"
I said, turning away from Viv's raised brows. "Who's this?"
"Name's Mike Bundy. Listen, this might be a long shot, but do you know a girl by the name of Casey Dawson?"
I froze. "She's dead."
"Yeah," I said. "Yeah, I know her. She was my brother's girlfriend." "Thank fuck," the guy said. "I've been making long-distance Hail Mary calls all day, looking for a tattoo artist in Vegas named Teddy. Do you have any idea how many tattoo shops Vegas has?"
I squeezed the phone.
"You found me. What's going on?"
"She's dead."
"Yeah, listen, do you know her family or a friend? Someone who can help her out?"
"Me," I said, like staking a claim. "I'm a friend. Where is she?"
"New Orleans. I'm a bartender at a club called Le Chacal. She sings here every Thursday night. You getting all this?"
"Yeah, yeah." I fumbled around Vivian's desk for a pen and paper, ignoring her frantic gesture at three other calls flashing on hold.
"New Orleans, Chacal, Thursday nights."
I scratched the words down stupidly, as if I'd forget where Casey was now that I'd found her.
"How is she?" I asked. At the same time, the bartender said, "How soon can you get here?"
The panic in my chest ignited and tightened.
"Fast. Tomorrow, if I have to. Why? What's wrong? Is she okay?"
"No, man."
The sigh he exhaled was somewhere between relief and resignation.
"She's pretty fucking far from okay."
I hung up with Mike feeling like a runner at the start of the most important race of his life. Vivian was yammering at me, but I hardly heard her. My heart was pounding and my stomach twisted as I made a mental list of all the stuff I had to do to get to Casey as fast as possible. In New Orleans. She went halfway across the country to drink herself to death.
"I gotta go," I said, snatching my black jacket off the coat rack. "Cancel the rest of my appointments."
Vivian stared.
"Cancel your... Where are you going?"
I headed for the door. "Call Gus for me. Tell him I gotta leave town for a few days. Family emergency."
"A few days? Gus'll lose his shit. He'll fire you."
"Just call him, Viv, okay?"
I pushed out the front door without waiting for a reply. I raced to my truck and sped down the Vegas streets, equal parts frustration and relief, cursing every red light while wanting to cry like a baby because I'd found her. The rest of my conversation with Mike Bundy echoed in my head.
"Drunk all the time, keeps to herself, no friends. They call her the drowned girl, and man, it's true. She's fucking drowning."
I had a second chance to make things right. I hit another red light and slammed the heel of my hand on the steering wheel, then honked the horn. The sound howled in the desert air, then faded away to nothing. Back home, I fired up my laptop to search for cheap flights. Tuition for UNLV had eaten a good chunk of the money Jonah left me, and I obsessively guarded the balance, thinking of my future shop. Round trip to New Orleans with no advance would eat up $700 of my savings and required a return date. I hesitated. I had the money, but no idea what would happen when I saw Casey in New Orleans, or how long I'd be there, or if I'd come back alone. "Don't get ahead of yourself," I muttered. I looked for one-way flights and found a red-eye leaving tonight, arriving in New Orleans 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. A shitty option, with a layover in Dallas-Fort Worth, but it was the soonest they had. In fact, it departed in less than 2 hours. This was going to be tight, but if I waited even one day, I'd go fucking crazy. I rushed to my bedroom, dragged a rolling suitcase out of my closet, and started throwing clothes into it. I juggled my phone in the other hand, scrolling through contacts as I made a mental list of people to call before I skipped town. My parents, Oscar. I should call Gus personally, so he wouldn't fire me. I hit call, put the phone to my ear, and kept packing. The voice that answered stopped me cold.
"Hey, you've reached Jonah Fletcher. Leave me a message and I'll call you back. Have a good one."
An automated message said the mailbox was full. My parents had insisted on continuing Jonah's phone service so we could hear his voice. The mailbox was full of messages from old friends saying goodbye or telling him how much they missed him. Instinct had made me hit Jonah's number. Around Jonah, I felt calmer, less stressed by my own emotions that ran so fucking hot all the time. I stared at the phone in my hand. My vision blurred, and I blinked furiously until it was clear again. I resumed packing with a vengeance. "I found her, bro," I told Jonah, tossing a pair of jeans into the suitcase, and the force of my conviction had me talking out loud. "I found her, and I'm going to make sure she's safe. I won't fail again. I promise." I gave my parents a whitewashed version of the truth. A mutual friend had contacted me about Casey. She wanted to see me. I was leaving tonight.
"Tonight?" my mother cried. "Why the urgency? Is she okay?"
"She's fine, Ma. Last-minute flights are super cheap," I lied. "What about school?" my father asked from the line in the den. "Don't you have midterms next week?"
Fuck. I hurled a t-shirt into my suitcase. If I missed those tests, I'd probably have to take and pay for the courses all over again.
"Yeah," I said, thinking on my feet. "I'll email my professors, tell them it's an emergency. They'll let me reschedule."
"Are you certain?" Dad asked. "Last I remembered, college exams were serious business. You can't just skip them."
He lectured on, and I muttered a bunch of bullshit assurances as I hit the bathroom and collected my shaving kit. Finally, he hung up his end with a disgusted snort.
"Tell Casey we love her," my mother said. "Tell her I understand why she left, okay?"
Maybe she understood, but I didn't. On the drive to McCarran Airport, the edges of my worry morphed into anger. I wanted some fucking answers. But by the time I was at the gate, the fury had burned out, leaving the reality I'd be seeing Casey again. Soon. Tomorrow. The drowned girl. I imagined her hair a tangled curtain over her face, her eyes streaming black mascara tears, a bottle of booze clutched in her hand instead of a guitar. I slumped in my chair, putting my feet up on my suitcase, and wondering what pushed her over the edge. She'd been a mess after Jonah's funeral, but we were all a wreck then, walking around like zombies, dazed and shattered. We knew for months death was coming. Still, when it arrived, it was like a cruel surprise. You can prepare all you want for some day. Nothing prepares you for the day of. The night Casey and I drove to the desert to scatter Jonah's ashes, she looked ready to blow away. As the wind took Jonah's remains into the black sky, I reached for her hand and let the words fall out of my mouth. Stay here. I wanted her to stay in Vegas, and I gave her my hand to tell her I'd help her. Help me, I may as well have been saying. Help me and stay here. Stay with me.
I will,
she said. And I believed her. Yet I didn't see her much after that night. I was trying to cope with my grief, but my true feelings for Casey kept getting in the way. How do you console a woman over the loss of her man when you wished, with every particle of your body, she'd someday feel that deeply about you? The fact that her man had been my brother made the tangle of fucked-up emotions snarl into something I didn't need or want. I dropped by her apartment one night after work and found her writing songs. On the couch with her guitar, a notebook open beside her.
The words are pouring out, Teddy, she said.
But I should have heard how her voice trembled at the edges and how her eyes were shining and bright. Not for excitement or joy, but in the way you look when you're scared to death, and that fear is lighting up your nerves like a switchboard. 2 weeks later, she was gone, leaving me with only a simple truth. I needed her, maybe more than she needed me. Chapter 4. Theo. New Orleans was a city as green and old as Vegas was brown. In April, the heat wasn't bad, but the air was filled with water. The GPS on my rental car guided me to the French Quarter and the Le Chacal Club. It was almost noon. Mike said he wouldn't be there until 6, and he wouldn't give me Casey's home address or any other personal information until he met me in person. I appreciated the caution, although it left me impatient as hell. I checked into a small hotel on the fringes of the French Quarter and took a nap to recover from the sleepless night on a cramped airplane. I had a quick bite at a cafe, then took a walk up and down Canal Street, searching faces. Every blonde-haired woman I passed made my heart leap. None were Casey. Time crawled by until 6, when I went back to Le Chacal. It was a small, dim club with a cartoon jackal in pink and green neon buzzing over the front entrance. A small stage area was on the left, a smattering of thin wooden chairs and tables facing it. The bar was tucked into the back right corner, where a huge guy with a rust-colored beard was getting ready for the night. Backlit shelves of glasses provided the most illumination. A jazzy song played from a sound system, and a few patrons were already there, talking and drinking in low voices. I stepped up to the bar. Mike Budney? The big guy sized me up.
Yeah?
I offered my hand. Theo Fletcher, Teddy. He shook my hand, then planted both palms on the bar, his expression tight.
Call me Big E. Everyone else does.
Sure.
You weren't kidding about getting here quick, he said. Still, I can't be giving out her personal info until I know the whole story. Are you the reason she split Vegas to drink herself into a stupor every night?
No, I said. It was my brother, Jonah. Casey was his girlfriend, and they were real close. But he...
dumped her?
Shit. One of the perks of shutting down my social life
was I hadn't had to explain this situation to anyone in 6 months. My chest tightened as I said, "He died." Big E nodded.
"Sorry to hear that, man. But it explains a lot. I can hear it in her songs, you know?"
"I'll bet." He rubbed his beard and sighed.
"Beer?"
"Sure." The bartender popped the tops off two bottles of something dark, handed one to me. He clinked it to mine, and we both drank. I took a long pull of the cold, bitter ale, as if I could wash the words, "He died," out of my mouth.
"So what's your plan, Theo?"
"See her," I said. "Help her. Whatever she needs." Big E kept nodding over his beer. His blasé attitude was starting to irritate me.
"Look, man," I said, "all I care about, literally the only thing I give a shit about in this world right now, is making sure she's okay. You called, I came. Now tell me where she is."
The big guy gave me one more appraising glance, finished off his beer, and set the bottle down.
"Saturday night she plays the Bon Bon on Barone Street. You might see flyers around. Set starts at 9.
"Thank you." I finished off my own beer and reached for my wallet.
"On me," Big E said, and offered his hand again. "I'm glad you're here, Theo."
I shook it hard. The guy was genuinely concerned, and without his phone call, I'd be sitting in the Wynn Galleria, apologizing to Jonah for the 1,000th time.
"Thanks for calling me, man."
"And for saving my fucking life."
Bon Bon was bigger than Le Chacal, and a lot more crowded. I got there early enough to grab a 2-person corner booth, which I jealously guarded. Twice, women asked to squeeze in with me, and twice I said the seat was taken. The label from my beer bottle was peeled off and torn to shreds by the time the lights finally dimmed. From the booth, I had a clear shot to the stage. A stool and a mic stand stood pooled in a circle of light, waiting. The stereo music faded to silence, and so did the conversations of 50 patrons or so. All eyes turned to the stage. Then she was there. No announcement, no introduction. She just appeared, her guitar already strapped around her, her long blonde hair falling like a tangled curtain to conceal most of her face.
"Casey. Damn, baby." I froze, my eyes drinking her in, gulping down 6 months. She looked thin, dressed in sleek black leather pants and a ratty olive-colored sweater, oversized and hanging off one shoulder. The stage's lone spotlight glinted off her hair and skin. She was drunk. I knew it from the slow, careful way she took her seat on the stool, adjusted the mic, and strummed her guitar once or twice. The place was hushed and seemed to hold its breath when finally she moved her mouth to the mic and said in her rich, somewhat weakened voice,
"Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm going to sing a few songs for you tonight."
The crowd erupted into applause, breaking me out of my trance. Then Casey started singing, and I was immediately plunged into another one. That voice. She sang about waking up surrounded by beauty and peace, opening her eyes after a long nightmare of loud music, a party that never ended, and a costume she could never take off. I sat still, my eyes either open to inhale her or closed to better hear her words. The first song gave way to one about a lover's kiss that erased every other kiss that came before. The next,
was about a night spent under stars. I was transported to the Grand Basin, a camping trip with friends, listening to Casey sing around the fire. Something shifted in me that night. Some cataclysmic alteration of who I was as a man. It was that night that she ruined me. Or saved me. I didn't know which. Song after song, I relived Casey's time with Jonah. Specifics hidden in the lyrics, leaving the emotion exposed in sharp detail. By the time Jonah's health was declining, in a song called 1 Million Moments, I was clutching my beer bottle hard, half hoping it would shatter, cut me open, and break the spell of pain. Stop the tide of feeling from rising to the surface. God, she's so fucking beautiful. Drunk and disheveled, reeking of misery and defeat, and she was beautiful to me. I wanted to bulldoze through the chair and tables in front of the stage and grab her, carry her out of this place and the people who applauded the grief she gave them in songs. I wanted to put my hands on her, confirm this was real, that I wasn't dreaming of sitting in a New Orleans jazz club, listening to Casey Dawson sing. "This is my last song," she said. "It's called The Lighthouse." Casey strummed a long intro of sad harmonies. Over the course of the song, they degenerated into purposefully discordant notes, evoking a ship breaking apart, plank by plank. Through the melody, Casey's tears fell. Her voice hitched and faltered, but never quit. Her breaths were stolen like someone gasping for air, but they didn't disrupt the song. They were the song, as much as any lyric or chord. The last note hung in the air, then dissipated. The crowd sat hushed for half a second, before breaking out into subdued applause that grew in intensity, until the small, dark club was suffused with sound. I watched, transfixed, as Casey brushed the hair off her face, smearing the mascara that stained her cheeks. "Thank you," she murmured into the mic. "Good night." She slipped off her stool and disappeared behind the black curtain. As the crowd around me returned to normal conversation, I sat in my booth, feeling her voice and music reverberate through me. When the sound system came on with some jazz number, I jerked out of my thoughts and frantically scanned the club for Casey. Shit, I'd fucking lost her all over again. She probably slipped out the back while I was mooning like an idiot. I relinquished my seat and wound my way through the crowd, searching faces. I spotted her at the last stool on the bar. She sipped a cocktail as a man at her elbow scribbled something on a cocktail napkin and slid it across the bar to her. She picked it up with a game smile and nodded. As the guy left the bar, his smile was hopeful. I realized my hands were clenched into fists. Casey told me once that during her time with her old band, she'd take roadies or fans to her bed at night. Was she back in that habit, too? Casey stared after her admirer, waited until he was out of sight, then tore the napkin into long shreds. Good. I let go my fists and my breath, and moved toward the bar, as Casey slid off her stool and picked up her guitar. She stumbled, nearly fell. Another guy steadied her, and she flashed him a grateful smile. He leaned to say something in her ear. She shook her head and squeezed through the crowd of people, many of whom grabbed her arm or hand or even reached out to hug her. I followed, my pulse pounding faster with each step that closed the distance between us. She pushed out the front door and stepped into the street. Her hair, not pale white anymore, but brassy blonde, glowed like a flame under the streetlight. Then the door sliced her off.
Fuck!
I pushed through the crowd, now closing in on me like a zipper, and shoved open the door. I looked right and left, up both sides of the street that were lit with ornate, old-fashioned-looking street lamps. Gone. Again. Fuck me. I chose a direction and started off down the sidewalk, thinking it was impossible Casey could have gotten far when she was drunk and lugging a guitar case. Unless she hopped into a waiting cab. I passed an alley between Bon Bon and a bustling cafe. Stopped. Backtracked. She had her back to me, trying to light a cigarette, her guitar case on the ground. I approached slowly, not wanting to freak her out. My pulse jumped in my throat. She was so close. Only 5 more steps, and I could touch her. I swallowed hard. Casey. Her thin body jerked, and she slowly turned around. Her cigarette and lighter fell out of her hands. Through a veil of stringy blonde hair, she stared at me. Teddy? Her large, beautiful eyes filled with hope. Her dark brows came together, and her mouth tried to smile and collapse into tears at the same time. Relief. She was relieved to see me, and for a split second, the misery that had wrapped itself around me for the last 6 months loosened. Then her features hardened. Instead of looking like she was going to fly into my arms, her expression turned murderous, her luminous blue eyes icy. You shouldn't be here, Theodore. She picked up her guitar case and pushed past me. Go home.
Chapter 5. Casey. My low-heeled boots clopped on the sidewalk as fast as I could manage. My guitar case banged my knees, trying to trip me up. I wanted to throw it down, turn around, and run to Theo, fly at him and dive into his arms. You came. You're here. You found me. The city was New Orleans, but my drunken eyes only saw Vegas in the days after Jonah's death. The grief coming out of the past, roiling in my guts, making me more nauseous than liquor. Making me need his arms holding me, need his chest to cry against as I begged forgiveness. I'm sorry. You're horrified to see me like this. I know Jonah would be too. That's when shame hit my veins like a shot of whiskey, and a panic chaser sent me running in the exact opposite direction I wanted to go. I heard heavy footsteps behind me, a breathless call. Casey, wait! His hand closed on my upper arm and yanked me to a stop. I yanked back, knowing I couldn't outrun him, knowing I was kidding myself, but I fought him anyway. What are you doing here? How did you find me?
Mike called me, he said. Mike Budney?
Big E, I muttered. As sloppy and drunk as I was, I'd been obsessively secretive about my past, keeping all details on lockdown. My booze-soaked brain tried to recall what I might have told Big E that led him to Theo.
He's worried about you,
Theo said, letting go of me and crossing his arms over his broad chest. He wore a black t-shirt and jeans, and the eyes boring into me were whiskey-colored, fiery, under the streetlights.
Now I'm worried, too.
Well, I'm tired, and I want to go home, so can you make this quick? His light brown eyes widened in disbelief.
That's all you have to say to me? After 6 months?
What more do you want me to say? I'm sorry? I blew a lock of ratty hair out of my eyes. Fine, I'm sorry. Happy?
Not remotely.
What do you want, Theo?
To talk, he said.
He scrubbed his hands through his short, dark hair.
Jesus, Casey. It's been 6 months.
To talk. I pretended to think it over, while my mind was a shocked blank. Sorry, Teddy, but I got nothing to say.
Sorry isn't good enough.
We stared each other down, and somewhere behind the alcohol, I knew I wasn't going to win this standoff. Fine, I said, handing him my guitar. Let's talk.
Where?
Somewhere neutral.
Like?
If he was shocked when I gave him my home address in the 7th Ward neighborhood, he didn't show it. He punched it into his phone's GPS, and Siri helpfully chirped directions at him. Now I'll have to move, I muttered.
What?
Nothing. We pulled up to my street with its rows of shotgun houses. Theo parked his car in the carport behind the Toyota I'd bought used in Vegas. On my frantic drive to Louisiana, the universe sat on a pillow in a box on the passenger seat, seatbelted in. I never drove the thing anymore. My house was only 10 blocks from the French Quarter. Not to mention driving when one was blitzed 24/7 was highly irresponsible. God knows I'm responsible, I sneered at myself. My porch lights, the beautiful whiskey bottle lamps Jonah had made for me, were burnt out. Had that just happened, or had I not noticed until now? My cheeks burned as I struggled to get the damn key to find the lock. Inside, I strode toward the kitchen to make a nightcap, leaving Theo to shut the door and pick up my dropped purse. I poured vodka over ice. You want one? Or a beer? He shook his head. He stood with his arms crossed, his dark-eyed gaze unwavering. I sipped my drink, self-conscious of every movement. You wanted to talk, right?
I didn't fly all this way to listen to bullshit.
My eyes flared wider. Bullshit? I haven't said a word.
Yeah, no kidding.
You're the one stalking me.
People are worried about you, Case, he said,
his voice softening slightly. Oh, it's a guilt trip then. Do you get frequent flyer miles for those? Theo didn't laugh, and his eyes didn't leave me. My cheeks burned. I slammed my drink on the tiled kitchen counter. Look, I don't need you coming here and humiliating me. That seemed to throw him a little. His shoulders hitched.
Humiliate you? How?
By being here. By seeing me like this. Why do you think I left? To hurt Beverly or Henry? Or you? No. I left Vegas because he was everywhere, Teddy. Jonah was everywhere, and I couldn't take it.
What, you think he's invisible to me?
I'm telling you why I left.
You mean bailed?
His handsome face was stoic, but his voice was filled with pain. Fine, bailed, snuck off in the night, and left a note. I could have stayed, but for what? So you all could watch me fall apart? I shook my head, raised my vodka to my lips, and took a long swallow. It's better this way. It's fucking awful, but it's also better, in the long run. For everyone.
It's killing you.
I snorted into my glass. I can handle it.
Bullshit.
Is that why you're here? An intervention? Get me into rehab? No. I looked up, studied this man in my living room, his arms still crossed and his feet planted apart, like a bouncer. Or even Hugo, Rapid Confession's bodyguard, who'd scooped me drunk off a stage and put me in the back of Jonah's limo, changing my life. Too many memories, too many coincidences circling back to memories. So, I drummed my fingers on the counter to hide how they were twitching. You're going to throw my booze away? Force me to quit? No. His tone stayed even and hard, while mine edged toward panic. I slapped my hand on the counter. So, what, then? You wanted to talk. Talk.
I'm waiting.
For what? One of his shoulders rose and fell. That was all. He looked so strong and solid and heavy. A boulder of muscle that had planted itself in my living room with no intention of moving. You're waiting. I ran my hands through my hair and clasped them behind my neck, trying to stop the room spinning. Well, you can't wait here. Get out. Theo didn't move. Did you hear me? I said. You can't stay. Not a blink. Not a breath. He looked paused, like a robot with a switch flipped to off. My arms dropped and I planted my hands on my hips. Are you deaf, Teddy? I said get out. He drew a deep inhale then. With the exhale, his booted feet seemed to embed deeper into the floor. I lanced my finger at the door. Get out. Silence. Frustration mounted in me, tinged with something else. A bone-deep certainty. This was it. My one chance at salvation. Help me. God damn it, get out of my house, I cried. Leave me alone. When he didn't budge, I seized my cell phone. It was a burner phone, the kind you buy at a convenience store. It had nothing in it except contact numbers for the clubs I sang in. I'd thrown my other one away into the Nevada desert months ago. I'll call the cops, I said, brandishing the cell in front of me like a gun. I'll have you arrested for trespassing. Is that what you want? He didn't move. I felt something start to crack in me, the eggshell-thin barrier I'd erected against the grief. A levee against the river of soul-deep pain. I swear to God, Teddy, I'll call the police, I said, my voice trembling. A muscle in Theo's jaw twitched, but his gaze was unbreakable. My breath started hitching, getting no deeper than my throat, and my hands were shaking so badly, I nearly dropped the phone. I threw it at Theo instead. Get out! He inclined his head slightly, didn't even flinch as the phone sailed to the right of his ear and smashed against the wall. I mean it, Teddy. Get the fuck out! I grabbed a couch cushion and hurled it at him. It landed at his feet. The second cushion hit him square in the chest and bounced off. I was screaming now as I dug through my purse for objects to throw at him. My wallet, a compact, a wad of tissues. Everything missed or fluttered to the floor. Finally, with a hysterical cry, I swung the purse itself like a shot put. It careened across the room, the force swinging me halfway around. I lost my balance and fell to my knees. The impact against the hardwood crackled through me, and I hunched over, hugging myself to keep from breaking apart. He won't leave. I'm sorry, I cried, my face aching with the strain of holding back the river. I'm so sorry, Teddy, but go. Please, go. I don't want you to see me like this. He won't leave. He won't ever leave. He's strong and healthy and well, and he won't leave. I heard the creak of floorboards, felt them shift under my kneecaps. Theo's booted foot appeared in the murky blur of my vision. When he spoke, his voice was a mountain.
I'm staying here.
He knelt beside me and picked up my head. His large hands held my face, brushed the hair from my eyes, and made me look at him. His hard gaze implored me to give in. Let go. But the terror of jumping in the river and confronting my grief wouldn't let me. I needed to drink. I needed to stay drunk. Or I'd die. I'd drown. I opened my mouth to tell him that, and the words came out all wrong. I need help, I whispered. The words were cool in my mouth. My skin felt feverish. My tears were scalding as they streamed down my cheeks to his fingers that held me. Everything hurt, except the words. Help me, I said, swallowing it like cool, clear water in the desert. Please, help me. Theo's hands spread wide on my face. His eyes shone.
I will,
he said.
I'm here, and I'll help you.
I searched his eyes, desperate to believe him, clutching his black t-shirt and twisting it in my hands. He was telling the truth. There was nothing about Theo that wasn't solid and honest and fiercely loyal. I'd seen the same conviction in his eyes when he'd held Jonah's hand through that awful biopsy. And now he was offering the same to me. But I couldn't quit the booze. I couldn't survive it. I collapsed against him, sobbing hard, but not turning myself inside out. Not yet. The urge to drink was furious and malevolent. It had sunk its teeth deep into me and wouldn't be purged so easily. But I'd begun. I clung to Theo, and he held me tight, the solidity of his presence bolstering me, as if he were lending me some of his strength. After a few minutes, he shifted on his knees to sit on the floor. I wiped my eyes on his sleeve. I've been drunk every day for 6 months. I felt him nod against the crown of my head. It's going to hurt bad, isn't it? The nod grew bigger.
Maybe you should see someone. A doctor.
No. I hauled myself off the floor. Theo rose too, steadying me when I wobbled. I looked it up a month ago, when I had a bad night and thought about quitting. Hospital rehab programs give you drugs to cope with withdrawal. Drugs that make you feel nothing. I looked up at him, clutching his forearms, still needing his strength. I have to feel everything, don't I? Feeling is the whole damn point. Because it's not just the booze I'm getting out of my system. He nodded.
You can do this, Case.
It's going to suck for you, too, I said.
if you're sticking around to watch.
I can take it.
What about your job?
It's fine.
I can't ask you to.
It's fine, Case,
he said.
I've got it covered.
His hard tone and stony expression left no room for argument. I hugged my sides and rocked back on my heels. If you're sure. His face softened.
I'm sure. And it's late. You should probably try to get some rest.
What about you?
Once you're sleeping, I'll get my stuff from the hotel. Crash on your couch.
In my bedroom, I kicked off my boots, peeled off my leather pants and sweater, and exchanged them for baggy sweatpants and a plain t-shirt. I crawled onto the bed and curled up around the universe orb, my eyes already starting to droop. Theo came to the doorway. He stared at the glass a moment, then cleared his throat.
You have a stash in here?
He asked. The drawer in the nightstand, I murmured. Sleep was already coming for me. Behind closed eyes, I heard the drawer open and close. My morning flask of brandy confiscated. A pang of fear and doubt shook my shoulder, begged me to get up and save the stash. But I was sinking too fast. Thank you, Teddy, I said. I know it's so much to ask. Too much. He pulled the covers higher. I smelled the clean scent of his cologne.
It's not too much,
he said. Liar. He grunted what might have been a laugh.
Good night, Case.
For one short second, his hand rested on my shoulder. I wanted to take it and hold on all night. But the dark kept my limbs motionless. Still, I knew Theo was there. I wasn't alone anymore. And that was enough. That was everything. I woke in the morning with my stomach twisted in painful knots and a craving in my blood, roaring like a hurricane. I found Theo asleep on the couch. He wore gray flannel pants and a white wife beater revealing the inked muscles of his arms. I wandered into the kitchen with the idea I'd make coffee, like normal people did. The trash had been taken out, and a fresh empty bag lined the can. I knew then I could check every cabinet, drawer, and hiding spot in the entire house, and I wouldn't find one drop of liquor. I stood in my kitchen, my mouth dry as the Vegas desert, my heart pounding. I didn't want coffee. I wanted my morning brandy.